what we need the most. We are our own experts, because what is going to help me navigate my hardest days will look very different from what will help you.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. I've brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted.
Thank you for joining us here on the Autoimmune Hour with Sharon Saylor. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune and Life Interrupted Radio. Join the Autoimmune Hour's Courage Club. Sign up now at understandingautoimmune.com. Now, back to your host, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And as always, it's my honor and pleasure to be with you here on a brand new episode. And I don't know what's going on. It's like ping pong here. One week I got a schnozzel thing going on, and the next week I'm fine. And as you could probably hear, this week the schnozzel thing is going back on. So apologies in advance. I'm fine. I'm not testing positive for anything. Who knows what it is? Like, it's just schnozzel stuff. But I'm good. I'm going to take a quick sip of my tea, chai tea with oat milk today. That's good. That's good. I make my own almond milk, but you know, I found oat milk. Maybe I'm just lazy, but it's hard to make. So what are you guys curled up with now? Because I've got a return guest, a dear friend of mine who I absolutely love. And I wanted to talk to her about some things. I'm getting to that age. It's over my friends. We're becoming caregivers for other family members, not just our children, but our senior family members. And coming out of this pandemic, I have to tell you, I just feel myself a little bit of grief, as well as I'm almost in a collective grief. So I got a whole long list. I hope I can get to it all in our short time together. So I'm going to introduce her really quick, and then we're going to jump right in and talk about it. Tonight, we've got Yvonne Heath. She's been a registered nurse since 1988, and she's worked in the United States and Canada in areas including emergency, chemotherapy, palliative care, and hospice. And, you know, she became disheartened with society's reluctance to talk about and plan and prepare for the transition, the end of life, and the grief that comes with that. And she found that it was causing excess suffering. Oh, I can so agree too. And she suffered too, not knowing how to do it differently. So in 2015, she wrote a fantastic book. I just love it. Read it often. You know, it's one of those books you can just open it up and find nuggets wherever you open it up at. It's called Love Your Life to Death. And she followed it up with I Just Showed Up Movement. And that's about creating social change around the grief. Like, instead of this idea, I don't know what to do, so I won't do anything, we just show up. She also has a fabulous TED Talk called Just Showing Up. I could go on and on, but I really want to get her on. So welcome to the show, Yvonne. Thanks for coming back.
Oh, Sharon, it's always just amazing to have a conversation with my dear friend. You're so awesome yourself. So thank you.
And I miss seeing you in person, but it's so great to see you here on the video for you guys. Yes, you can always go over to YouTube to Understanding Autoimmune and find the videos as well if you're listening to just the audio. But you'll get the great nuggets either way. Now, Yvonne, you probably heard my intro there. I don't know where we want to start, but I'm just feeling, you know, that I'm working through so many different levels of grief, whether it's all around me, like a collective grief, and then we come in another circle, like the ripples on water, where maybe certain of my friends are. And now I'm at that age where I notice my family members are needing more care, and I'm having to sort of prepare for what we all know is the inevitable. We don't know when, but, you know, the inevitable. Anyway, I could go on and on. So where do you want to dip your toe into that mess?
As I was listening, there's just so much to unpack there, isn't it? And it isn't there. And what I love in what you're saying is that you recognize that it's grief, right? And like you're saying there, like, I'm going through this, and there's the pandemic happened, and I feel this grief and friends. And so much of the time we don't even recognize we're grieving, or, you know, that's what we're experiencing. Because a lot of people feel like grief is what you experience when someone dies, and you're sad and you're crying. And it's just a whole lot of mess more, isn't it?
And it's a lot of mess
Right?
more.
It, like, grief is experienced, it's in how I define it, and it's many things, but it is our sort of mental, physical, and emotional reaction to loss, transitions, and change. And the transitions can be good transitions, marriage, a divorce, kids leaving home, kids not leaving home, whatever it may be, like the transitions of life, there's grief and there's joy in them. And when you talk about collective grief, here this pandemic, everyone's heard of COVID-19, right? Of course we have, like literally affecting every human in the world. And there was this ripple of change, which we don't all love. I hear people say, we don't like change. I say, oh, well, there's excessive suffering because change is the only constant. But in that pandemic, there were so many changes. And there's still COVID-19 is something that is never going to go away. We've now accepted it's like the flu. It's not, they've managed it. But in that, there was so much grief in this pandemic. And here on the other side, when everyone says, oh, phew, we're going to go back to normal. Well, here's the elephant in the room, the truth. Many of our social issues were here long before the pandemic. So it's not like we've gone back and everything's fine. And many people who preferred the time that they didn't have to go to work in a building, they didn't have to do these things because this pandemic, they were more isolated and they're introverted and they were happier. Now they have to change again. So it's this wave, this ripple, this roller coaster, and there's a lot. You know, it is a roller coaster. And you also mentioned some people have kids and aging parents. We're the sandwich generation, right? We're right in the middle. We may be dealing with our own issues, our own health issues, and our parents are aging, or neighbors or relatives, and we have young kids. That's a lot to navigate.
It is a lot to navigate. And yet I don't want to come across as whining to you,
oh,
Yvonne,
no.
Because, you know, I know I remember my mom and my grandmother's generation went through the similar types of things. Yet, I don't know, when you're going through it yourself, it just, you can just feel so much more intensely. I'm saying it out loud, guys, than when you're observing it from somewhere else.
Oh, and, absolutely.
And it's interesting you mentioned going back to whatever, you know, BC, before COVID, guys. I'm not saying it's BC.
BC, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So going back, and you're right. That wasn't all perfect. That wasn't all twinkle stars and butterflies either. And yet some people have this idea of somehow it was this wonderful, juicy place of, you know, sparkles. And
yeah,
I remember my grandparents, and as I said, my mom taking care of my grandparents, you know, so.
Well, here's the thing though, Sharon, and it's interesting because it's sort of a yes and, right? When you think of, you know, you don't want to whine or complain because your parents did this, and it was a very different time also, because you just took care of your elders. Like there wasn't, right? Like people back in the day, there was someone most of the time, perhaps a woman stayed at home and took care of the house, and your elders lived with you and you took care of people, and like things slowly changed and our expectation of what we're capable of. So we should all work full time and our children should be in 500 activities, and we should also be able to take care of our aging parents and our own health issues. It's just the most unrealistic expectation, right?
Add that, and how many family members really don't live in the community anymore?
Everyone.
Even if it's an hour or two away, people are, I'm close. Well, how close? Well, 90 minutes. That's
not
a long way.
Close. Well, exactly. And like I say, it's funny because there's also sometimes guilt and, oh, you know, I should want to do this. I should want to take care of my relatives. And I will say it right now. We have 18-year-old twins about to go off to university, which I already know there's tremendous grief and joy in that. We're going to be empty nesters. There's some excitement about that. I'm excited for my kids, and I'm also going to be a hot mess. I've already apologized. I've already said to them, I already apologize for how I'm going to be at your grad. Don't try to control me. They're like, I know, Mom, you're just going to be a disaster. I said, absolutely. So we already know this. And, you know, the excitement of the freedom. And then we have all these aging parents all around us needing more things. And, you know, I say, selfishly speaking, but not really, because I'm thinking, well, I don't want to start caregiving now. I want this time. I want this time to me. And I'm going to choose not to feel guilty about that. And I'm going to do what I can to, you know, be able to give myself that time and just show up for them. And we are also going to create a compassionate community so that there are many people involved, that they have a compassionate village helping them. And I have a great example of my mom, who just turned 80 last year, and she has been healthy and doing her thing in her own apartment. And last year she had a virus, this crazy health issue. It affected her mobility. You know, we didn't know. It was so out of the blue, and we didn't know. And she wasn't able to leave her apartment, and she needed so much more. And it was sudden. And again, there's tremendous grief in that. There's worry, and there's, oh my gosh, okay, well, I have two siblings. Well, one lives 3 hours away, and one lives in San Diego, and we live in Canada. They can't just show up. So I'm sharing with people the Compassionate Communities movement, of where we need a village, because I can't be the only person, because I also say, well, what if I had to get my appendix out? Right. And my mom was completely dependent on me. Let's not do that to ourselves or to those who need care. So I was just like a machine. I was like, Mom, let's get your compassionate community in motion. Because the other thing is, people are, oh, I don't want to ask for help. And people, oh, I don't want to interfere. Right. So we don't ask and people don't offer. And I say, let's change that as well. So I said, okay, Mom, you live in this apartment building. And because she had said, can you check my mail? And I said, well, the lady next door that you know goes to the same mailbox, and it's down the road every day, right? Let's just ask her if she minds getting your mail. She said, of course not, not at all. Another neighbor's like, do you mind when you take your garbage to the curb? Would you mind just getting my little bag? Not at all.
Absolutely.
Right. Like, and another friend who went to the same grocery store, she said, just order your groceries online. I'm happy to deliver them. So we had like 12 people doing these little things that meant a lot to my mom. They just showed up for her, which they felt so good about. And she felt so supported.
There's a lot there. But the important part to me was, when I'm in those situations, I don't know what to do. So usually I just kind of wait, and then they never know how to ask it or anything. But I love that, because it was organized. It was one simple thing. I could show up, didn't take time or effort, really. I mean, what is it to get the mail right next to my mailbox, you know? And yet, how wonderful that, you know, it was available. And I'm thinking, it's so simple. And yet so many of us are either afraid to ask or assign the job or the duty, or don't know how to ask, like, hey, I'm available for something. I don't have a ton of time, but I could do XYZ. I love that.
And isn't it, it's silly, right? Though, like, it's so silly, because every time I ask someone, like if I asked you and I said, Sharon, why wouldn't you ask a neighbor to, you know, help with your, I was going to say shoveling your snow. I don't think you have to deal with that, do you?
Oh, this winter we have, but go ahead.
Okay.
I think shoveling the snow, though, honestly, as you mentioned that, I'm thinking about being really selective on who you ask what, because I know the one person that would volunteer, I'd be worried about their health.
And, you know, here's the thing. And again, with the reluctance to ask, like when I say, if I said to you, Sharon, why don't you, you know, what stops you from asking people, say, well, I don't want to bother anyone. And then if I said to you, well, how do you feel about helping other people? What would you say?
Oh, I feel great. Although I don't know if I'd volunteer to shovel your snow.
No, but that's the thing, right? And you have to have your boundaries, and the boundaries are very simple. What I'm able to do, what I'm not able to do, what's okay, what's not okay. I always say to people, you know, I will just show up for you. Do not ask me to bake you a pie or cook a lasagna. I don't do that. I'm sure Martha down the road, she just loves to bake. Ask her for some cookies. My superpower, I will sit with you in the mud and hear what is happening and help you create your compassionate community. I will empower you to ask questions and to ask the questions and say, it's okay to say no. I just know that, you know, I'm just asking as a friend, it's okay to say no. I just wonder. And it was really wonderful because another friend was like, I'd be happy to stop by every week and have tea with you. And my mom needed companionship. And I just said, like one of her friends said that to me, I said, that would be amazing. That would be wonderful. Because I also don't like how boring having one person visit you. Like, right? Think about it. It's interesting because everyone feels like, oh, I don't want to bother people. We've really become siloed, right? And we'd rather suffer in silence than think we're bothering someone. And we need to change that.
I love this conversation about that. But I have a question about certain, you know, I'm thinking of friends, family. I'll just say one of the eldest children always has sort of been the taskmaster and mm-hmm. rallied the troops and everything. But I know my friend complains about, well, I'm willing to help. They just feel like they have to run everything, though.
Yeah.
So how do we have the conversations with the people who are so much in their grief that they feel they have to control the whole world and can't let go?
And fear is also a big part of grief for many people. And for them to be able to control those things is helping them to not feel the fear or perhaps not feel their grief.
Oh,
right.
Wow. I didn't think of it that way.
Well, you know, when you're like, okay, and I've done it, right? Okay, I've got this and I'm going to do this and I'm too busy controlling everything to feel all these really hard feelings. And I love Brené Brown. I'm listening to Dare to Lead right now. Like she's about having these rumble conversations, right? When mm-hmm. when there's, and we don't love to have those confrontational or challenging conversations. And sometimes we need to. And it's funny because again, we don't practice this, right? So let's say that sibling who's controlling everything and someone else just feels they're out of the loop or they're frustrated and they want to be more involved and they wish that the reins weren't held so tight. And, you know, as much as it's challenging, it's worth it to sit and say, awkward conversation coming up. I just feel like I love you. I want to be able to say this. And I remember Brené Brown's Netflix special. And she said when she was talking to her husband about something, she said, the story that I'm telling myself.
Oh, I like that.
Right? Isn't it? Oh.
The story I'm telling myself.
The story I'm telling myself is that, you know, I feel like you don't trust me to help because you want to control everything, blah, blah, blah. Like, whatever that is, but it's the story I'm telling myself because you don't really know what's going on inside that person, right? We're assuming.
Yeah.
We're assuming we know why they're being the way they are. And that person might say, yeah, I think you're very incompetent. Ouch. That's a whole other rumble conversation. They may also say, I didn't even realize, like, I'm just so nervous and this is helping me to, and then it could lead to, well, I would really like to be a part of this and take over this or something. And again, we all assume, and it's like, when we do that, the story I'm telling myself, you're just sharing how you're feeling and they're the assumptions you're making. And yeah, if that person says, yeah, if I don't do it, it's not going to get done right. And I said, well, here's the thing. Maybe I won't do it as great as you. I really want to be a part of this. And the thing is, I'm concerned. Because when it's one person controlling everything, you also need time away. You need to take care of you, right? That whole just show up for yourself first. It's not sustainable to be the only, the everything to everybody. It's not sustainable. And you're also being a very poor example to everyone else.
Wow.
Tough love. We need to,
yeah, really. I want so many places to go with that. We need to take a quick commercial break, though. So I'm going to mull this over because I'm not sure. I mean, so many places I want to go with that. Okay. We'll be right back.
The Autoimmune Hour will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by understandingautoimmune.com to learn more.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenil and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenil.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, sorry, I'm rambling, you say, thank you for listening. Join us at projectforgive.com, a free non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift. Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com, and you can find all our wonderful episodes, including this one plus another 400 plus, over at understandingautoimmune.com. And I just want to shout out to painresource.com and feedspot.com for putting us on the list of 2023 pain and or autoimmune shows you should be listening to. So thank you very much to those two groups for doing that. That was such a pleasant surprise to find out when my assistant said, hey, look at this. So cool. So thank you. It makes all the hard work worth it. And we've been talking with Yvonne Heath, and she is a grief expert as well as she's the founder of the Just Show Up movement. I love that title because so much of what she talks about is, are you showing up? And sometimes you don't have to come with grand gestures. It's coming from this other place and showing up, as with you said, with the pie. I'm on with that one. Don't ask me for a pie unless it's okay if I stop at the local bakery and pick it up, because you're not going to want to eat it. So I was thinking about this conversation we have. We rarely talk about these tough talks that we have to have during these changes in people's lives, including our own life. And I love this idea, what you said, Brené Brown said, about the story I'm telling myself. That's really powerful. I'm thinking, my friend, because I know there's an age dynamic in their relationship. I'm just going to guess that my friend would say, they always think I'm the incapable little sister. I'm still the baby sister, even though I'm way into adulthood with gray hair or something. I know she would say something along those lines. So when we have those conversations, do we do any sort of setup before that? Like, do we have to lay any groundwork, or what's your... I mean, I just feel like that takes a lot of courage to be able to say that.
Absolutely. And that's all Brené Brown's message is that vulnerability is courage. Being vulnerable is courage, right? Like, it takes courage. Mm-hmm. And no matter what, there are going to be times in our lives where maybe we don't see eye to eye. We have different perspectives. We feel we're right, they're wrong, etc. And it's funny because when we put so much into it, right? Like, these brave conversations, you have to be so courageous. What is the person going to do to you? Like, what are are they going to do to you?
You know what flashed on my was from my own childhood. I had a cousin who used to, I think it was called a noogie, where you got the thing on your head, noogie. You know?
Right, sure. Okay, so maybe your sister will give you one of those. But I mean, like, for the most part, it probably won't get physical, right? So when you say, let's set it up. Well, first of all, I guess being in a good place, like in it, like literally physically in a good place. So it's, you know, sort of neutral territory, I guess, or sitting outside on a bench or something, so that, you know, it's a comfortable place, and letting, you don't want to just jump into it at the wrong place. If you say, you know, Sharon, can we just go outside like around in 1:30 or something? Just want to chat. 1:30, we'll sit outside, grab a coffee, and just, you know, have a heart to heart, whatever language feels right, as opposed to, you know, the person's in the middle of something and you're like, the story I'm telling myself is you're awful or whatever. Right? Like, just, and obviously depending on how serious the situation is, right? I mean, if it's, you know, something that's just nattering at you, and that's the other piece, for the most part, that's what we do, right? We let things slip. We don't say what our preference is. We don't say, I feel ignored. And then it builds up, right? And then someone makes you feel like you're the little sister who doesn't know what she's doing for the 100th time, and you lose it. Ah, you're having a big hissy fit, and they're like, whoa, what happened to her?
Exactly. It came out of nowhere.
It came out of nowhere because she hasn't been speaking her truth for 20 years is where it came from.
Right.
And that's on us. And we do that. I've done it. I've done it many times, right? Like you just, okay, this person just, every time he says something, I feel like it's inappropriate. And then when they say something and you're just like, wah, inappropriate reaction for the situation, because we've allowed it to build up. So to have, you know, again, at this time in our lives when people are living longer, we have chronic illnesses, and we don't talk about grief, death, and dying. We're very ill prepared for death. We're raising children, you know, navigating our own health issues. We need one another. And to have those wonderful, authentic, real relationships requires real, authentic, vulnerable conversations, right? As opposed to, oh, she's always controlling everything, so you're going to go tell everyone else but the person because you don't want to have that conversation. Well, you know, you're not allowing them the opportunity to be different either, right? So it's not really fair, is it?
Yeah.
You know, it's all in how we reframe it, isn't it?
And that reframing is always upon all of those things we've been nattering, holding in. It's like, okay, well, this is just part of that. And oftentimes, as you said, it's a story you're telling yourself. And most people are like, I don't know about your family members, but I have siblings, and I'm just kind of in the middle there. And I'll talk to my siblings, and it's like we grew up in different households. Mm. We had the same parents the whole time. I mean, and yet how they experienced either their place, like their numbering in the family, or their age, or even the greater community. I mean, if you grew up in the 60s, totally different than the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s. It's fascinating to me how people that experienced, if you're looking from the outside in, the same situation have entirely different memories of those situations.
And it is a different experience, right? For each person.
Absolutely.
It's a completely different experience. I literally just had this conversation with my mom. Funny, it's for the first time. And I said to her, oh my gosh, mom, don't you remember how many times I was grounded in high school for staying out late? I feel like I was grounded every other weekend. And I was kind of laughing about it. And she said, what? I don't ever remember you being grounded. What do you mean? Like, I was, you know, I was a brat. I stayed out past curfew and I was always late. And she's like, oh, I don't recall that at all. And I just thought, like, that would be her most vivid memory of my high school years. And she didn't remember that. She probably suppressed it. But I mean, that speaks to your point, right? That speaks to your point of, and like, again, our twins, Jaden and Tanner, who are in school, Jaden had a teacher, and you know, Jaden's very deep and philosophical, and Tanner's kind of like black and white, shiny and brand new. Like he's not deep, soulful, and they're both amazing in their own ways. They each had the same teacher at different semesters, and my daughter was just in love with this, like just revered this teacher. And my son's like, oh God, Mom, I mean, she's talking to us about self-reflection. I mean, oh God, right? Totally different experience. And so what we need to do also is get more curious, get curious about someone's behavior. And, you know, all of this requires skill and practice, which we don't practice any of this. So someone who's being very controlling, as opposed to being defensive, like, oh, she always has to control everything. And how about let's get curious? I wonder why that is. How about we ask questions? Right?
I love that.
Let's get curious. The story I'm telling myself is that you need to control everything, and you see me as the little sister, and I feel like you see me as incompetent, and I'm just curious, what is this? Is this how you feel? Is this, why do you feel this control? I feel like, is it fear? You know, and just really authentically being curious. Wouldn't that be a better approach as well?
I think so, if it comes from true curiosity. I've had people frame questions as they're, I'm curious, and then bam.
Of course. Sabotage. Yes. Yeah. No, that's true.
So I think if we come from the place of observation and the place of outside ourselves, like I'm not carrying my innuendo, my nonverbal communication. I guess I have this eyebrow that goes up sometimes when I talk to family members, and some family members just feel like that's a sense of judgment when that eyebrow goes up, and I'm not honestly aware of it. I've had people tell me it happens, and I'll own up to it.
Yeah.
However, it's like spontaneously happens. So,
geez, I wish I could train this eyebrow. It doesn't
exactly.
It has a mind of its own, right? I mean,
and so I think, yeah, if it comes from this place of true curiosity and love, and learning to shut up as the questioner, I find sometimes when I come from curiosity, the first response you get is defense.
Oh,
defending
absolutely.
My position is over here, and just being able to shut up and listen instead of defending your question.
And there in that, when I think of grief, and the biggest thing is acknowledging and allowing someone's feelings. They feel defensive, they feel this, whatever they feel. It's like, okay, that's how you feel. Right? But like we want to fix things, we want to defend ourselves, we want to be right, and we want to have these great relationships. Well, you know, again, a lot of that, especially in families, is a buildup of many years of resentment, of conversations that didn't happen, right? Of assumptions on the other person's part. Fear. And I will tell you that fear and grief and thinking of, you know, aging parents, dying parents, ill parents or children or whatever it may be, when we are ill-prepared, and we do not have coping skills, strategies, and a belief about life and death, and the skills to ask, and the skills to give and receive, right? Receive, like we're not, another thing, in the past, we have not been great at receiving, because they're so wonderful. They just do everything for everyone. They give, give, give. We don't celebrate. Oh, she's such an amazing self-caregiver. I mean, look at her. She just receives, 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 and takes good care of herself. I mean, like, think about that.
Yeah, I think those are the opposite words. The opposite side of the coin words come up when you say that.
Right? People are like, what?
I've heard the other comments of, she's so selfish. She just
she's
spends
so
time
selfish.
On herself.
Oh, she, right? And again, I think when we, you know, when I say, well, let's just step back and say, well, how are we doing? Like, okay. I think there's always going to be room for improvement. But I mean, like, as a society as a whole in our Western culture, we don't know how to just show up for ourselves and each other and celebrate that, right? We don't know how to give and receive and reach out and say, I am struggling here. I feel like that's one of my superpowers, actually. I will just say, I am in the weeds here. I don't care if you think I'm great. I'm struggling. I'm falling apart. There's all this stuff and I just feel overwhelmed. I have no problem saying that or feeling it. I don't know. I don't have the need to do it all on my own. And I've done it. I've been there, done that. I'm over it. I am over
it. I love that. And I have a question then. I'm pretty much at that place too. However, every so often someone will think that that place needs to be saved. Oh, well, I'll jump in. And if you're so over it, you're so done with it. Instead of letting me go through that part of the process, they're like, oh, and someone else jumps. So, I mean, we're talking about boundaries then, about what's yours is yours and what's theirs is theirs, and being very clear.
The boundaries for me, when I talk about that, is simply what's okay and not okay for me. That's it. Right. And that can change. Like right now, I might say, you know what? No, actually, I've got this today. I'm good. And then the next day, I say, I don't know. It all blew up and I fell apart. And maybe someone looks and says, well, geez, you were fine yesterday. So, yeah, I know. Totally. I absolutely had it yesterday and today for whatever reason. Right. Like things change. And sometimes to let people in. And the other thing is, it is challenging to just stay away from judgment and comparison, right? The comparison to what we used to do, the comparison to what, oh, well, my sibling can do this or my sister can do this. Why can't I? Or judging, oh, yeah, she's too tired, I bet. You know, we can really fall into that. And it's all easier said than done because we've normalized all that other stuff.
You know, and what came up for me about a lot of that, we're talking about judgment. And oftentimes I find there is no closure. I mean, regardless of what is said or done or you hear or you experience, there's just not going to be the kind of closure you might be wanting. There's a closure. There's a movement. There's an ongoing time marches on type of thing. But I find a lot of people now are going through this process of like, what did that all 3-year pandemic just mean? And or they're not able to explain or define what is closure to them. When will they feel closure if they get what? Mm-hmm. Or what is the need that needs to be closed? I just find sometimes people get stuck in that place.
Because we want things to be neat and tidy and done.
Yeah, exactly.
We want, right? Like we want grief to be like when people held on to those stages. Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, the stages of grief, which she never intended for the world to take. We wanted to have that. We want to, when someone dies, in the funeral, there's quote unquote closure. We divorce, we want closure. I don't believe in closure. I think closure is a myth. Ooh, I'm going to ruffle some feathers. That's okay.
Me too. Giving up on the need to have it is not easy.
That's right. Well, and because here's the thing, what are we closing? Because to me, when something ends, whether someone dies or a relationship or there's this pandemic and now we're on the other side of it, again, as I say in my TED Talk and everywhere, grief and joy, it's a roller coaster and we have to learn how to hang on through the dips and curves. When something is over, whether it was positive, negative, whatever in our, you know, thinking, there's going to be moments where we're so joyful that this happened and we're going to see the positive. And, you know, we've taken something that was painful and created passion and purpose and a positive outcome. And then other times we're going to just feel the pain of it. There's never any closed door. I think that we walk away and whatever we've experienced becomes part of our fabric. I mean, it's woven in. It's just a matter of how much it is like the grief and the joy. I think, you know, when someone dies, that's just obviously that's an example everyone can relate to, and you just feel consumed by grief, right? Like you don't even know how you could ever feel joy again. You miss this person's physical presence so much, it's hard to breathe. And as time moves on, and when people say time heals all wounds, well, if you are allowing your grief, and my friend Maria Klevkoff is brilliant as well, and she talks about converting your grief to mourning. So grief is that internal reaction to loss, transitions, change, whatever, and mourning is that external expression of it, whether it's crying, writing, honoring someone, creating an altar, a ritual in memory of them, that external expression. And that's also what we struggle so much with is seeing people, God, they're still crying. And that person died 8 months ago and they're crying. Well, yeah, because they're sad today, right? To acknowledge and allow that space. And the, can we please try to get over the, shouldn't they be over that by now? There's that, right? Shouldn't they be over that? It's been this long. Well, we don't know their experience, and if they're having a grief attack in that moment, they're having, it doesn't mean they're, you know, like that every day, all day. I think that we just have to know there will be ebbs and flows of whatever, you know. You could be divorced 25 years ago and suddenly you're just feeling the pain of, wow, today would have been our 40th wedding anniversary, and you're having a moment and you hadn't thought of that person in years, and you're thinking, huh, what's wrong with me?
Where'd that come from? I put that to bed a long time ago.
What? Yeah, that's weird. And, you know, if we can just, again, but self-judgment, like just allowing that moment and say, huh, all right, well, I'm just going to go with it. I'll have a little cry. And it's all a part of our being. I mean, nothing ever just, right? We don't leave things. That's the way I see it. And it's funny because when you say grief expert, we are all our own grief expert, right? Like I love what I've learned. I love sharing beautiful, like just so much wisdom from so many people that have been in the deep trenches of grief, that have helped others, you know, now just walked with them, accompanied them in their grief. I am just honored to have conversations and companion someone. We all know what we need the most. We are our own experts, because what is going to help me navigate my hardest days will look very different from what will help you. So like if I said to you, Sharon, I'm the expert here. You need to start journaling and, you know, baking pies for everyone, and that will help you. And you're just like, oh, I don't do that. We all know, we just need to hear our internal inner wisdom. We know what we need.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I work with a lot is listening to where someone is, and I say this in air quotes and with love, though, is where they are in their story. You can tell, are they still reliving this? Or have they moved to that place where it's a different place where they're retelling the story? And it's still important to them, and it may become less and less important. But it's interesting to me, if we listen with intention of hearing, really hearing, not responding, it's so helpful for me to understand, like, oh, okay, I can hear that there's much more behind what the words are.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, I've noticed, and even in my own stuff, going through when I talk about the first days of my diagnosis, that's a grieving period too. And I think it's important for us, as from that place of curiosity, is listening, okay, where is this story coming from? How fresh is it? And it could be on a timeline quite old, but it still can be quite fresh to the person who's sharing the story.
Absolutely. And you said something that's so key, is to meet them where they're at.
Meet them where they're at.
Right. Like this is, we want, and again, I always say, this is from compassion and caring. We don't want people to suffer, and we don't like to see it. We want to drag them out of the suffering. We just want to pull them out, and with every good intention. And what they need more than anything is for someone to meet them where they are in their darkness and just say, like, I don't know what to say, but I'm here and I'm with you. If you want to talk, I am listening. If you want to be quiet, I'm going to be quiet, even though that's really hard for me. Put a little humor in there.
I think it's hard for all of us, isn't it?
When people say, oh my God, it's so uncomfortable, I say, yes, don't wait for it to be comfortable. Don't wait for it to be comfortable. This is challenging. And yet what makes it more challenging and awkward and uncomfortable is how we always define all these situations as so hard. And what makes it so hard is, and I say to everyone, how do we get good at anything? How do you become a better volleyball player? How do you become a better anything? You practice. Practice having challenging conversations. Start small. Go to your child who's going to say, "What are you talking about, Mom?" Say, "The story I'm telling myself is I keep asking you to clean your room and you just, I feel like you're just ignoring me and I just might have to have a tear because whatever." Practice being vulnerable. Practice just showing up when someone is struggling and you see them and you're like, "Oh, there's Joe. His son has an addiction. He just went to rehab. I could just walk by and Joe won't even know that I saw him."
Yeah.
I'm going to just show up. And that's why I have my bracelet. And it says, "I just showed up because I want to teach by example. I don't tell people to just show up. I teach by example. See, this is what I did." And I will do that. And I will go out of my way. Well, I just actually did it the other day. There was at the end of our road, there's a cemetery. How appropriate for me, the death ladies, people are dying. And there was this beautiful older man. I mean, he looked like he was in his 90s. And he was standing by like a stone. And he was obviously very emotional. And I was walking my dog and he hadn't noticed me. I thought, "Okay, Yvonne, here you can. You want to just show up?" And I thought I could, and I had to slow down and like pretend I was busy walking my dog, or, you know, like petting my dog and stuff, so that as he was walking out, I would meet with him. So I intentionally made sure I met with him. And I said, "Wow, this is a really beautiful sunny day, isn't it?" And he said, "Yes." And anyways, I just asked one more question and he ended up talking for 15 minutes.
Probably the most important 15 minutes of quite a long time.
Right. I get choked up thinking about it because I could just tell he just wanted to be heard. He wanted to tell me about his wife, Gertrude, who had been married for 65 years and she died 7 years ago. And like he told me, I probably knew more about his life story than most people. And I just said to him, "Oh, you really love her because, you know, love never dies. It continues. And wow, what a beautiful love story. And thank you for sharing it." And when he cried, he said, "I'm sorry." I said, "Oh," I said, "your tears are wonderful. It's because you loved her so much. Thank you for sharing this with me. I'm so glad I ran into you." I know that meant something to him. And I walked away from that little moment. I haven't seen him since interaction, and my heart ached for him and it was full of love and I felt so wonderful, right? Like I just felt all warm and fuzzy and sad and all of it, but it was so beautiful. And I was so grateful that I took that moment, that 15 minutes out of my life, and I knew that that made a difference. I didn't fix it. There was no advice. I just said, "Thank you so much for sharing this with me."
Wow.
It was wonderful. Wow. It was wonderful.
And I just wonder how many people he went home and told, or even if it was just related to himself over and over again, how wonderful it, how important that is. Yeah. And practice. Little story, when you were talking to your kids, reminded me of a time that as I was learning this, my kids were in their teen years, as I was beginning to learn more about these tough talks, as I like to call them, and things like that. Mm-hmm. And one of my particular children, I like to push the line occasionally. And I remember, I thought, okay, I'm going to sit down and I just learned this new skill. And I don't remember exactly which one it was, but I thought, I'm going to practice this. And I'll remember this about, I don't know, two or three sentences in. "Oh, Mom, I know you're trying really hard. Just forget all that stuff and ground me."
Oh, my God, that's hilarious.
And I thought, okay. Okay, but I mean, obviously it was a little clumsy because he could tell I was practicing.
Oh, good for you. It was on to you. They're on to me. That's hilarious. Well, that's the thing, right? We also have to be okay with getting it wrong.
Now that they're grown, it's kind of one of the family funny stories.
Well, exactly. And that is a hilarious story. And you can laugh about it for years. And that's the other piece, right? You're going to get it wrong and you're going to stumble. And, you know, I've had my kids say, Mom, please, is this another spiritual lesson? Because I always, like, I bragged about, oh, you know, when we're in the van, I always like have conversations and, you know, they don't even know that I'm teaching them a life lesson. They're like, Mom, is this another life lesson, spiritual conversation? Can we just like listen to music for once? It's like, oh man, they're on to me. And, you know, like allow our humanness, right? And they're, that's a funny story. And you're going to get it wrong and you're going to just show up and someone's going to say, you know, I don't want you here. But like we have to allow our humanness and be able to laugh at ourselves.
Oh, absolutely. I could go through a couple of other comments that the kids make that are just,
oh yeah.
Yeah. At the time we're really tough, but now there's sort of the inside family humor. So.
Exactly. Oh God. Yeah. That just reminded me of I went to a parenting course and it was like how to talk so kids will listen and listen so kids will talk. And I just felt like I was the best mom in that moment. I've totally got this. And my oldest son, Tyler, was my lovely, challenging human. I always say to Tyler, I said, you know, the people who challenge you the most are your greatest teachers. I said, do you know who my greatest teacher is, Tyler? And he says, who, Mom? I said, I'm speaking to him right now. He says, oh, yeah, it's true. But I was just like having this moment and I picked him up and he's in the back seat and I was trying my new skills. And then he like just pushed five more buttons. And I lost it. Like I pulled over and I was just like great from amazing mom to crazy mom. And I was yelling and like, oh, you're driving me crazy. No, I just drove away feeling so like defeated and deflated. It's like, well, that was definitely not in the course. And I laughed about my, you know, my parenting, my wonderful parenting moment for so many years. And I did end up saying to him, it's like, wow, I think I got an F in my course because I really lost it. But I'm sorry that I just lost it. Sorry. You know, like I did. And I'm going to do it again.
Yeah. I ended up apologizing. It was so critical. And we're down just to the last 2 minutes. I love talking to you, Yvonne. And thank you for sharing so much. What, any final thoughts about for the last 2 minutes? And then where do we find your book? And how do people find out more about you?
Well, thank you, Cher. I can't believe it always flies by with you. It's just always such great conversations. Seriously. You know, the greatest thing that I can share with anyone is, like I said, if we can approach all of this with heart, humor, and allow our humanness and see that in others as well. You know, none of us, we're all perfectly imperfect and flawed. And of course, my call to action, as I share with everyone, well, first, feel free to go to my website, loveyourlifetodeath.com. I have my show there, my book, my TED Talk, everything's there. People can reach out to me there. And I always say, if you want to be able to just show up for yourself and others in this beautiful journey we call life, start with plan your life, plan your death, and then just love your life to death. And always bring your own tambourine to the party. And that's the greatest advice I can give.
I love the tambourine there. Okay. Everyone, that's Yvonne Heath. She's the author of the wonderful book, Love Your Life to Death, and founder of the I Just Showed Up movement. So, and well, check out TED Talks, Just Showing Up is the Transforming Your Grief by Just Showing Up, I think is the name of
that's
the
it,
TED Talk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone, thank you so much, Yvonne and community for being here on another brand new episode. Have a great week, whatever your adventures. Pop over to understandingautoimmune.com and listen to some other shows. Be able to go there. And, you know, if you think of a guest, there's a place for be a guest. You can send me a quick note and let me know who you would love to hear. Thank you, everyone. Enjoy.
The information provided on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, including the websites understandingautoimmune.com and lifeinterruptedradio.com, plus social media, is for educational purposes only. What you read, hear, and see on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, and its websites, and other media outlets, is based on experience only. The information should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenil and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenil.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there.